Hey, this is Tom Waddle. Thanks for listening to the Waddle and Sylvie podcast brought to you by Miller Lite, the presenting sponsor of the 2020 ESPN 1000 Virtual Fantasy Football Championship. Find out how to be a part of it at ESPNFFC.com.
From State Street and the First Midwest Bank Studio, this is WMVP Chicago, ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. It can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
Baseball City USA here in Chicago. Both teams, both the Cubs and the Sox, playing well. Cubs top of the NL Central, and the White Sox come north with a five-game winning streak. So this weekend should be a lot of fun to watch what takes place. Jesse Rogers will have a front-row seat for all of it, and he joins us now to fill us in on what will transpire. Jess, how you doing, buddy?
Yeah, literally a front row seat, at least in the upper deck. That's where I've sat the last few days. It's just, I mean, I got to tell you, it's kind of nice, but it's also very sad because right now I'm actually on the deck down the left field line in the back, you know, behind the concourse overlooking Gallagher Way. And do you realize what it would be like, Tommy, in Wrigleyville this weekend, tonight, if fans were allowed in? I mean, it's pretty much dead as you'd expect. It is a gorgeous night, two great or very good baseball teams. So I do get that first row seat, but I feel bad for the fans that can't experience this.
Jess, who do you think? I mean, this is one of the typical sports talk radio questions, I'm sure, that people will lob at you. But this series is more important to which team?
I guess the White Sox. I mean, the Cubs have been there, have done that before. They're in first place, right? If they lose two out of three, it's not going to be devastating for the Cubs. But you want to talk about confidence building series wins, this would be certainly one of them for the White Sox in a short series. And I'm going to really praise the White Sox here. And it goes back to what we just saw against the Tigers. Granted, it's the lowly Tigers. But yesterday's game told me a lot about this team, Tommy. They easily could have mailed it in after winning the series, playing a day game after a night game, and thinking about the Cubs. You know the Cubs are on their mind. You know that. That's just, it's one of those stepping stone type series. You're trying to achieve something. You beat your crosstown rivals that have a World Series ring in recent past. So they could have easily looked past the Tigers yesterday. They did not do it. They took it to them, won that game handily. That told me something about this White Sox team. And I think they actually have the edge on paper going into tonight. After tonight, I don't know, because the Cubs are much better against right-handed pitching. I think, you know, Dylan Cease against his former team is going to be jacked up, but I'd still give the Cubs a little bit of an advantage. And we don't know who the Sox are throwing on Sunday. But on paper, I really like the White Sox momentum going into tonight's game.
Jess, Adam Abdallah read us the Cubs lineup a little bit ago. I'm sure you've seen it, obviously. Are you a little surprised with what David Ross is running out there?
Yeah, and it's a little surprising social media hasn't blown up. I mean, if Joe Maddon threw Hernan Perez out there instead of Jason Kipnis or Nico Horner, wouldn't social media be going crazy?
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, Hernan Perez. I had a guy tweet me, who's Hernan Perez? Like, didn't even know he was on the team.
I thought it was Nathy Perez when it was first announced. I didn't know that, yeah.
Yeah, he's a platoon guy they brought up from the alternate site in South Bend when Souza went down. So he's getting the start. And here's the thing, Tommy. As a reporter, you can't really go back and forth with managers as much as you could in the past about lineup decisions, because they can just simply fall back on, well, I like the matchup. Our research and development team said this Hernan Perez would be good against Dallas Keuchel. And you know why they can do that? They can say bat path and swing plane and spin rate on the ball coming in from this particular pitcher is good for this particular hitter. And how can I argue with that? They have an unbelievable amount of resources to pull from to say something like that when stats, past stats, don't apply. And there's no big stats on Hernan Perez and Dallas Keuchel, or Nico Horner and Dallas Keuchel for that matter, right? There's obviously something with Kipnis and Keuchel, but Ross has already shown, kind of like Schwarber with Maddon, that he is not going to start Kipnis against left-handed pitching. Some guys get the benefit of the doubt. They get the starts, and then they have to prove the manager wrong. In this case, he's got to somehow prove it with very few at-bats against left-handed pitching. He's 0 for his last 13, Kipnis. Some of those misses came against the Cardinals lefties. So that's probably another reason he's on the bench. So, yeah, I am surprised that Hernan Perez is starting. A little surprised that Elmore is starting. But right now, Tommy, David Ross doesn't have a lot of good decisions when there's a lefty on the mound against the Cubs. Their best hitters right now are left-handed, and they get neutralized, obviously, a little bit against lefty pitching. Who's not hitting lefties? Javi Baez, 2 for his last 31. Wilson Contreras, 2 for his last 26. Chris Bryant, out of the lineup. Think about those three right-handed mashers not producing right now. So the onus is on Rizzo from the left side, Hayward from the left side, Kipnis not in the lineup, though, but from the left side when there's a righty on the mound. They really are in a difficult spot against left-handed pitching right now. They're 5-1 against left-handed starters, but that is misleading. They rank 20th in OPS, and that's one reason, again, I like the Sox tonight because Keuchel against this lefty, you know, lineup, so to speak, the good hitters are from the left side, I think is an advantage for the White Sox.
I want to ask about Chris Bryant, but I want to build on what you're saying now here, too, and it's something that has kind of stayed in my mind as well, Jess. I'm not denying the 16-8 record, but I constantly ask myself the question, using my eyes as my guide, how good are these Cubs? So I ask you, how good are these Cubs?
Yeah, I think we talked about it a couple days ago. I was surprised by the fast start, but it's a credit to Ross and the leadership, the pitching infrastructure, that they were ready from day one. They had a great start. But I do think that they're closer to this team than the team that started the season on fire, meaning sort of a 500 team, maybe a little bit above that. And I do think they might just maintain this kind of pace the rest of the way, which would get them in the playoffs. But they don't look like a 40-win team, right? They look like a 35 or 34-win team. And there's nothing wrong with that, right, Tommy? So to answer your question, I still think they're a little thin in every area, a little thin in the bullpen, a little thin in the lineup, a little thin in the rotation. And whenever you have an injury or two, that lack of depth is going to show up. And it's starting to show up a little bit. Chatwood down, Bryant down, Kimbrel just getting back to form, and they're figuring out the rest of those middle inning guys. So they just feel a little thin in every area. But then on the other side, we still need to give them credit for the fast start.
All right, it is the time of day where we have to ask our usual Chris Bryant question. Is there any progress being made? What is the prognosis? When do you expect to see him back in the lineup?
I think it's going to be Sunday, and that's just my feeling on it. No inside information on that. He's day-to-day. They're not putting him on the injured list. Now, with the expanded roster, you can get away with that maybe. If they only had 25 guys, I bet he would be on it. So he took some swings today. We don't know the result of that. We'll find out either from Theo Epstein in a few minutes or David Ross after the game. But at least he was in the cage. At least he was swinging a bat. So that's the good news about the wrist. I still think it's going to be one more day, and then maybe he's back in there on Sunday. That's my gut feeling. Now, if he swings the bat today and things don't go well, maybe he does end up on the injured list. So it's like I said a couple days ago. I mean, he really needs to be 100%. You know, we've seen this in the past. Trying to produce through nagging injuries just doesn't work for Chris Bryant. It doesn't work for a lot of guys. He needs to be 100%, especially in the wrist, you know, area, considering how much you use that for defense and offense. So that's your update there.
Three straight really good outings from Craig Kimbrel. Are you buying that the old Craig Kimbrel is back, or you still want to see some more?
No, I want to see some more. I think it's emerging, though. I think he's emerging for sure, but I do want to see some more. And David, these are David Ross's words. He even said there's a ways to go yet. So let's see if it continues to trend in that right direction. At least it's going in that direction, though. I had my doubts it could even get this far.
Jess, there was always that talk that maybe he was tipping pitches. Is that something that you know or can tell that they've really worked on with him?
So to speak, yes. I think the mechanical changes they made helped alleviate that aspect of it, if that makes sense.
Right.
And so, yes, I think there is something to that, but it goes to the mechanical change that he needed to make anyway. And so now you're seeing a little bit more rise on the fastball, and you're definitely seeing a better curveball in terms of location. He did hit a guy the other day, but it's like now for every out, there's one bad moment instead of four or five, right? And soon enough, if he continues this way, he'll have zero bad moments, which you need in the ninth inning of a close game. So I'm buying the trend. I'm not buying he's completely back.
How excited were they to see what Alzolay did yesterday?
Yeah, that's a great point. Absolutely excited. Different kind of pitcher than he was before. Worked on his two-seam fastball. You know, the evolution of a pitcher. You want to see the progress. You take a step back, then two steps forward, then a step back. We're seeing that progress. That was a huge outing the other day, without a doubt. I don't think that's his last start of the season. You got to ride that a little bit. With Chatwood hurting, Quintana not quite back. He threw a sim game today, so he should be back soon. But you're going to need Asley at some point. You have more doubleheaders coming up with the Cardinals. That was a huge start for him. I don't disagree with that observation.
What else is on your mind about this team in this series this weekend?
Well, tonight, more in particular, very interested to see how John Lester does against this lineup. 9.43 OPS, the White Sox, versus left-handed pitching. 6-0 when a lefty starts. By the way, that 9.43 is best in baseball. Now, that's a small sample size, though, right? Everything's a small sample size. So were they facing inferior competition? We'll see. That's why on paper it favors the White Sox. But if John Lester can get his cutter inside on those righties, he'll have success. And then, of course, he has to get his changeup and fastball away on those righties. You got to work both sides of it. If he misses, that's a problem. And here's my worry about John Lester tonight. And I think you agree with this. You've seen him throughout the last 5 years. When he's going well, he keeps going well. When he starts to go bad, he keeps going bad. His last start, he gave up 9 hits. He's given up 9 hits or more, the third most in baseball since 2018. So I do feel like he's a guy that goes good, 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 then bad, bad, bad. Unlike, let's say, Quintana, who's good, bad, good, bad. So was last start the start of something bad for John Lester? That would be my worry if you're a Cub fan. It's just going to be difficult to keep that ball in the ballpark. My guess is with Lester, the best case scenario would be like 6 innings, 2-3 runs. Nothing wrong with that against a team like the White Sox. So again, on paper, it favors the Sox tonight, Tommy, but the game is not played on paper.
What would you say about where John is right now? Obviously, he's getting older. Is it just me or is his velocity down pretty significantly? I mean, there were times a couple years ago, Jess, that he would hit low 90s. Am I wrong by saying you don't see many 90s with the radar gun with him, even with his fastball anymore?
I haven't looked at the average lately, but at the best, it's like 91, 92. You're not wrong in general. He might hit the 90, 91 mark, but you're not wrong. That's why he has to be as crafty as he can be. We see this with pitchers that age, and he has been crafty, right? He comes inside to those righties. He moves away from them, and then he's still pretty good against the lefties, keeping the ball away from them for the most part. But you're not wrong. The fastball's down. He's not getting anybody out on that fastball. Right. Strikeouts are down for him as well because of that. He's not blowing anybody away, and that's why he has to be so fine. The cutter is the pitch. Inside on the righties, but not too far inside, right? But he can't leave it over the plate. It has to be perfectly placed, and that's the challenge for an aging pitcher that doesn't have the speed anymore.
Should be a fun weekend, you know? I mean, you got two really good teams. You've got a little bit of a rivalry here. I'm expecting some fireworks over the next 3 days.
Oh, absolutely. You have the trade in play with Eloy. Now, Quintana's not there, but Dylan Cease will be on the mound against his former team. You have all these subplots, you know, the playoffs. You know, for both teams, not on the line, but at stake, obviously, in the shortened season, can the Cubs' rotation and bullpen hold down the White Sox lineup? That's the big question mark. Obviously, the Cubs have to hit the White Sox as well. I mean, it all has to play. Yep. And the Cubs' bullpen, by the way, Tommy, the numbers don't look great, but you got to look a little deeper. It's actually been much better lately. High leverage situations, the Cubs' bullpen's pretty darn good. Their ERA is high, but that doesn't matter if you're up 7-2 if you give up some runs. What matters is holding down those leads, and they've done that. And obviously Kimbrel doing well also. I love the Sox bullpen. I really do. It's the Sox rotation that has to step up. We don't know who's going to pitch on Sunday. And obviously Dylan Cease at Wrigley Field, is the moment too big, or does he rise to the occasion? All these subplots in play this weekend, Tommy.
Should be a lot of fun. Always enjoy our conversations, Jess. Have a great great time tonight watching these two teams play.
And you have a great weekend.
Thanks, buddy. Jesse Rogers, always fun to talk to. Hey, when we come back, we're going to bounce back to the NFL and our Chicago Bears. Matt Nagy had some interesting things to say, and we will let you know what those things were in just a moment.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home. Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Before we get, I want you to report this, Adam. Before we get to our Bears conversation, you brought it to my attention. Listen, Roll Tide's important. The SEC is going to play ball.
Hopefully.
And anytime that there is a COVID update, I think it's important to tell people. So before we get to the Bears And what Matt Nagy had to say today after they finished their practice this morning.
So as you're seeing schools go back, as you're seeing students go back to school, what happens is you get these results from the student athletes who've been tested for months, right? They've been coming back. You hear Alabama has like 1% positivity rate, and you know there's schools like Oklahoma that had 9 students test positive, and Notre Dame had no students test positive. And,
no students or no players?
Student athletes. And then the students start coming back, the regular students, not the student athletes, the everyday students.
It is a COVID convention.
And it is a breeding ground, and so the entry tests on the Alabama campus are now at 29%. And they're shutting down in-person activities, much like Notre Dame, North Carolina. So you're seeing that returning to campus, these kids commingling.
So when you test positive at a campus like that, are you going home? Do they tell you to go home, or do they just tell you to quarantine?
So Chris sends us the story in a text chain of the news report from Notre Dame of the student who was sent to a different dorm. She was sent to an apartment. She was given like a bag of like water and sent food. Like a bag of water bottles.
And, Notre Dame just giving you a Ziploc bag filled with water?
Unorganized it was, is what she used. The word unorganized is how Notre Dame was handling it. I don't know how Alabama's handling it. In the story here, it says they have 450 dorms that are set up for COVID. Not dorm rooms. That are set up for COVID cases, for students that have COVID cases. So they're just going to, you know, everybody kind of stay in your spot for 2 weeks, and then we'll see how it goes from there.
There has to be a financial component to this, right? Like,
well,
everybody come back to school so we can charge you room and board.
If you get everybody back to school, you can charge for room and board, you can charge for meal plans and all that kind of stuff. And if you're quarantining in place for 2 weeks, you're not sending anybody home. You're still charging them for room and board, and you're doing, you know, Zoom e-learning and stuff like that, but from the dorm, so you're still getting that cash.
I'm telling you, some of this, and there's nothing good that comes from positive COVID tests.
Mm-mm.
But the point, I guess, that I'm trying to make is that there is a natural barrier that I think will be erected between the student athletes now and the student body.
Yeah.
Because of this. Like, I mean, now this is exhibit A for the cause of, listen, athletic dorm. All Zoom, e-learning from your dorm. You go to the workout facility. We'll have meals. Like, I know at Vanderbilt, where my daughters played soccer, there was a cafeteria right connected to the athletic facility. So you could have all your meals in the athletic facility.
Oh, trust me. Alabama's got their own.
I'm
sure. Student athletes have their own cafeteria.
Right.
They've got their own workout. This is.
So they can make it work, I think.
I'm not trying to be callous, and I'm not trying to say that we need football and all this kind of stuff. But
financially, they do need football.
No, financially, yes. The schools need football. A lot of them do. But also, there's a way to do this. Like, there are certain majors where you don't need to be on campus to learn. Like, my first 2 years of college, I didn't need to be there because it was BS Gen Eds that I don't use. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying, like...
Is that how they were advertised?
No,
BS Gen Eds?
Well, we went to Columbia,
I spent half a year at DePaul, and I took a Joan of Arc class. You know what I can tell you about Joan of Arc right now? Nothing.
I had to pay for a piano class for my second daughter to graduate from Vanderbilt. She was a credit shy somehow. So I had to pay for, at the last minute, like $900 for her to take a piano class.
I took Japanese. You know how much Japanese I know?
Yeah, but it's cool that you know it now.
I don't know it, though.
I
only took Japanese because they canceled the Arabic class that I thought I was going to skate through.
Well, that's on you to not learn that.
No, I mean, I paid attention.
What's wrong with that class? It's perfect.
My point is that a lot of this stuff can be done at home.
You get out of your education what you're willing to put into it.
Oh, and everything I learned at the Columbia College was great.
At the what?
At the Columbia College. The Columbia College.
How did we get here, man?
The Columbia College. But my point is that a lot of the students can be at home learning. Now, there are certain majors where you need to be, like when we talked to Michael Wilbon, there are certain majors where you need to be in person to accomplish your goals.
Right.
Okay, so have those students there, but separate them. There is a safe way to do football. There is a safe way to play football.
I think you are correct.
And if we get to it and it's not, then you shut it down. But you have to at least try.
I agree with you. Do we have time, Chris, to play some of the comments that Matt Nagy had for everyone today after Bears practice?
Yeah, I thought this was interesting. He was asked about Nick Foles helping Mitch with learning the position and kind of the relationship between the two quarterbacks. And is he kind of a mentor for Mitchell Trubisky? This is what Matt Nagy had to say.
So in regards to Nick, what you see and feel with those guys, their relationship growing each day is Nick has been in a lot of different experiences. He's seen a lot of different defenses. He's been, you know, in regards to playing in the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl. So the experiences that he has, the defenses that he's seen, he's taken all of that he's learned from and given that to Mitch to help Mitch. And I think in today's day and age, sometimes that's rare. You see people that are very selfish and people that want to do what's best for them and will be vindictive and malicious in how they do it. That's not who he is. That's not who Mitch is. And so when you have two guys that are competing for one spot and they genuinely both care for one another as people, and they say, may the best man win. It's easy for Nick to do that to Mitch. And it's really easy for Mitch to accept that and learn and reciprocate that, right? With experiences of the strengths that Mitch has. And so they're really feeding off of one another really well. And I think Coach Flip has done a wonderful job at making sure that the transition together really works and it's healthy. And so far so good with that.
That's awesome. That's why you brought Nick Foles in, I think, to be the quarterback, starting quarterback. But if for whatever reason Mitch plays better than him in this abbreviated training camp, you've got a guy that you trust that won't sabotage the situation, and I think that's obviously a good thing.
I thought this was another interesting question. Jeff Dickerson asked if Matt Nagy is evaluating the quarterbacks based on what he sees in real time or the tape when they go back and watch what takes place at practice. Here's Matt Nagy.
Way more post-practice than it is in practice. That's how you evaluate. You evaluate off the tape. And there's feel involved. We try not to overcoach them in practice. It gets too choppy. That's why we have so much film, is that we can get right back in here and get to the details of what did we see. There's a lot of times when we're out there watching a play from our vantage point that we think we can see the right angle, or why did this guy do that, or why did he run versus man or sit versus zone. And yesterday we had one with 29 with Tariq Cohen. There was a play that was kind of gray. It wasn't cut and dry, black and white. And we were able to watch it on tape and see, okay, yeah, the depth of that guy, he was a little deeper than we thought. I see what you're saying while you were running that play. You can't say that out there. So when we're seeing that, just like y'all are, we're evaluating everything off the tape.
I think, again, as something we talked with Dan Weider about, I think the most important things, at least from my perspective, is what you're going to be able to learn from watching the film when they go full man, when they go team drills. Okay, so it's 11-on-11. So it's not 7-on-7, which you can learn things from, but there's no pass rush. Quarterbacks don't have to shuffle left, shuffle right, read the fronts and do some of those other things. So when they're doing team drills, I would think as a coach, that's where you learn most about your team.
You want one more?
Yeah,
one more?
Bring it.
Okay, so remember in the offseason when the new coaching staff or the new members of the coaching staff were being mixed in, there was a lot of question about all the different voices in the quarterback room.
I got Coach DeFilippo. Yeah, yeah. I got Bill Lazor. Yeah, I got Juan Castillo.
And, you know, Matt Nagy is the offensive
He's going to be the play caller.
So he was asked today how that's going with the mix of voices in the offensive coaching room.
It's been everything that I expected. I can remember when we hired them after the season, you know, some of the questions that you guys asked was, well, how does that work? Are there too many, chefs in the kitchen? And when you're up front again with them and we all explain responsibilities and roles, and then you put it into action, it's been really good because there's constant communication. Every morning we get together and we discuss a lot of different things. Every night we get together and we wrap up the day of what we saw, what our beliefs are, what our opinions are. And then we get, how are we going to prep for tomorrow? Coach Flip, Coach Rags, Coach Lazor, the they all have a responsibility of trying to say, okay, conceptually, what plays do we want to run? Coach Flip, rep-wise, how do we get equal reps? Coach Rags helping me out, knowing concepts that we're looking for together. And it's really, it's I think you can feel it within our organization. You can feel it within our offense. When we go to installs, Dan, and we go ahead and detail our routes, and we all speak the same language. And when you speak the same language, there's no short circuit on plays, and it filters down to the players. And, you know, we got to just keep that thing going and make sure it always stays that way.
Two things real quick before we go to break. First of all, he's got his guys around him now. I think he's more comfortable. So that's one thing. And I think there's a comfort level with him now that, you know, you had guys around him before, whether it was Harry Hiestan or who was the offensive coordinator from Oregon, Mark Helfrich. Now he's got guys that he's more familiar with. And one of the residuals from that, in my humble opinion, is he's going to be surrounded by guys who will have a dissenting voice or a dissenting opinion probably more frequently than he did last year or the year before. And that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. You don't want to see them wrestling on the sideline. I get that. That would be, you know, an extreme. But if Flip thinks they should do this instead of that, if Laser thinks they should do this instead of what Matt's thinking, I think Matt's going to be more willing to listen to the dissenting opinions of guys he's familiar with. And I think the guys that are familiar with Matt are going to be more willing to have that dissenting opinion as opposed to just go along with whatever Matt has to say. So overall, I think that the coaching changes. There's a good opportunity for that to have a positive impact. The one thing I would say is just because you changed offensive line coaches, I know Juan Castillo is a very well-respected guy, but so was Harry Hiestan. Your offensive line isn't going to be better just because you changed coaches. So there's that element to add into it overall. But overall, I think it's him having guys that he's familiar with around him is probably a good thing. When we come back, we're going to segue to baseball. Cubs and Sox on the north side tonight starting, I believe, what's first pitch? 7:10? When is it? Somewhere around there? We had a nice conversation with Sox pitcher Lucas Giolito yesterday after he threw a gem beating the Tigers. We'll revisit what he had to say when we come back.
It's Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Watch and listen to us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000 Chicago, or download the Twitch app and follow ESPN 1000 Chicago. It's all brought to you by Night Games and Oak Forest and Miller Lite.
How is the Twitch crowd behaving today?
It's good. You know, it's popping.
Yeah,
it's popping.
I know it's
in the
popping,
chat today.
But you know, sometimes it gets nasty.
It's actually, you know, I haven't had to tell them to turn it around in a while. You know, I'm a mod in the chat. Which
You're
means
what?
I'm a mod. It means I can ban people. I can delete comments.
That's short for moderator, right?
Yeah.
Mod squad.
I did give someone a timeout today.
Really?
So they're not empty threats, Large Hallis.
What did they? What were they doing that they needed a timeout?
I feel like
if
they
you
were
say
spamming.
Something inappropriate, you can't.
They came in and I believe they were like spamming. They were just in there like putting
Don't
out
be
a
trying
bunch
to
of,
spam us yeah. on our site.
So I gave him a timeout and then he left. But no, I want to have fun in the chat. I don't want people arguing about dumb stuff in the chat. So
shout out to the Twitchers
while,
too. They're also alerting us that apparently Cap is going nuts on Twitter.
Oh, he's big mad
over what we were talking about earlier on the show. So shout out to
Would
those
he just
who
wake
are,
up from his old man's nap.
No, apparently he got done golfing.
He
and
was
then,
golfing.
So then he started responding to people, but then he couldn't keep up with them. So then he had to big time them and say, "Well, I'm golfing. I can't pay attention to this."
Well, after golf, he's got to wash the boss's car,
but
right?
No,
I said car.
It's not where I thought you were going.
But I did. That's what I said.
Do I have to turn this around?
You might have to. We might have to go back to like 145 and let Greeny take over.
Hey, you know what we did yesterday, man, which was really cool?
Yeah.
After the Sox put it on the Tigers, winning pitcher was Lucas Giolito. We had a conversation with him, and it was really cool. And you're going to hear it right now.
Lucas, congratulations. How you feeling today? Very good. Very good. Always good when we sweep.
Yeah, always great to talk to you as well. Do you feel like now, after like some ups and downs early in the year, that this team is really finding its way?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, we had a couple rough patches that we addressed. I think that a big part of it was us coming together as players, holding each other accountable, addressing those things early, kind of nipping it in the butt, and then getting it going again, which is a big difference that I've seen this year versus the previous years.
Lucas, how has life been in this era of COVID-19 for you as a Major League Baseball player, and some of the freedoms that you have had to sacrifice to stay committed to the cause?
Yeah, it's weird. I miss my wife. She's back in California. I'm probably not going to see her until the season's over. My pets, it's different, but at the same time, we're here to do a job. We're here to come out here, win baseball games. That's the main focus, and I'm glad that we're doing that right now.
You know, you mentioned accountability, and we talked about it on the show, and Chuck Garfine joins us weekly. How important was what Dallas Keuchel said in Detroit?
I thought it was hugely important. You know, I kind of touched on that in the first question. You know, basically us coming together as a team, not necessarily needing Ricky to come in and kind of correct the ship, having that type of leadership from a guy like Dallas, letting us know, hey, this is what we're doing right now is not what winning teams do. We need to come to the field ready to go, be ready to win a ball game. And so I thought that we responded really well to that back in Detroit, and now we're just kind of riding that wave.
When you watch Dylan Cease pitch now, where are the improvements, and how important is it that he's been able to add what he has had to added to your rotation?
Yeah, I mean, his stuff is undeniable. You know, his mindset during the game is great. I think that the biggest thing for him is getting that experience under his belt, getting used to taking the ball every 5 days in the big leagues. And yeah, I'm very pleased with his development as a pitcher. I think that he's only going to get better and better.
You know, you were great last year, and big things are expected out of you. Are you starting to feel like, okay, here we go, I feel like I'm back into 2019 role?
Yeah, you know, obviously it was kind of a weird, we had a little bit of spring training where I only had one outing, and then it got shut down, the quarantine period, coming back for kind of a quick ramp up. I'm pleased with today, pleased with the, especially the adjustment I made today in the first inning. The first inning's kind of been the bane of my existence, this year, and today we were able to make the necessary adjustments to get it going.
What does it do for your psyche also when you step to the mound and you know that lineup you have on your side behind you is as lethal as it is?
Yeah, it's huge. You know, we have one of the best offenses in baseball, and the guys are showing that now on a daily basis. You know, going out there, throwing up a zero in the first inning, then getting three runs in the bottom of the first, it makes you feel good as a pitcher. You want to go back out there, get those outs quick, and get the offense going again.
Lucas Giolito joining us. Sox win today. It's Waddle and Silvy on ESPN 1000. Lucas joins us on the Corona Hotline. Tim Anderson keeps on doing what he did last year. He missed some time. It almost looked like he had something to prove when he came back, that leadoff spot is his. How much swagger does Tim Anderson provide your team?
It's an undeniable amount. I mean, he's one of the spark plugs on our team, man. The way he carries himself as he goes about his work, he's loose and relaxed, but at the same time, very focused. He wants to improve every day. You know, his approach at the plate right now, it's only getting better and better, and he's got some of the quickest hands in the league. So it's just a pleasure to have him on the team and be able to watch what he does on a daily basis.
We talked a little bit about what Keuchel has added, but what about what Grandal and Encarnacion, guys who have postseason experience, and when you mix that with some of the great young talent you have as well, it feels like it is one of those fantastic mixes of young guys and older guys with great experience.
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest thing is that we're getting closer, not just as teammates, but as friends. We have each other's back. We can go to one of the older, more experienced guys and ask them for any kind of advice, both on the offensive and defensive side. It's just a really, really good mix of guys we have in here. And so, I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. We're just going to get closer and closer.
Lucas, where's the ceiling for this team this year?
Ceiling? World Series victory. That's the goal. Take a chance, championship back here to the South Side. Obviously, that's hard to do for any team, no matter how talented you are. But, that's the goal. That's what we're working towards.
And that being said, Lucas, like, how big is this? I don't know how you feel about it. You've been in a couple now, but like, how big is this Cubs Sox series starting tomorrow?
Oh yeah, I'm excited for it. A part of me wished I could pitch in it, but it didn't shake out that way. I'm looking forward to it. Going over to Wrigley. It is gonna be a little different not having the fans there, but I know that the Chicago fans love to get up for this one, and hopefully we go out there and take care of business.
How you mentioned no fans out there for you individually? How has that adjustment been for you?
It's been okay. It doesn't really affect me during the game. When it gets down to it, you're pitching a big league game and you need to go out there and do your job. So it's not too big of a deal, but I'm looking forward to having them back next year for sure.
Lucas Giolito for another minute on Waddle and Sylvie. So I was watching the post game on the television and I couldn't totally tell. Are you wearing a Bulls jersey right now?
Yes, sir.
Is that for lottery luck tonight or is that just... Yeah,
lottery day today, man. Got to get that good pick.
Now, is it who do you get? Do you have your name on the back, or is it a Bulls player's name?
Yeah, this is actually a jersey the Bulls made for me. It's got my name on the back and my number.
Very cool. Yeah. So what do you do then? You mentioned, look, you miss your wife, you miss your pet. Now you just won. It's not like you can go out and celebrate before tomorrow's game. So what does a Lucas Giolito do in the middle of COVID after striking out 13 players?
Go home, have a nice dinner, FaceTime the wifey, and then, just kind of relax, get back to video games. I still got a little bit of adrenaline pumping, so hopefully get some W's in Call of Duty tonight.
Lucas, overall, are you happy with how things have played out, not just specifically for you and the Sox, but, there were a lot of questions about whether or not Major League Baseball was going to be able to pull this off. Are you happy with the protocol and how everything has been followed?
I can only speak for our team and my personal experience. It's been great. Training staff, medical staff we have has done a wonderful job communicating with us. Our testing days, when we do go in and have our testing, it's been very seamless. We're in and out. We get back to our work. So we know, every single player in the locker room, we know what we need to do away from the field to stay as safe as possible. And so we can keep our eye on the prize.
Lucas, great job today. We always love talking to you. Enjoy tonight. Bring the Bulls some luck, okay?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Appreciate you guys.
And I believe Lucas Giolito did bring the Bulls some luck instead of picking seventh, as they are so apt to do.
Fourth.
They got the number four pick, so that is great.
Absolutely. Hold on. That NBA coverage was brought to you by visitkia.com to see what it means to give it everything, and by Bet River Sportsbook.
That's great. Hey, when we come back, we're going to do something and preview the baseball show with these two guys. That's next.
Coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
So you fellas got anything cool planned this weekend? Huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a party.
What's going on? Before, I'm not talking about the baseball show, which is coming up in just a few moments, which you guys will preview.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been fun today. This has been the pre-party to the party of the weekend.
We started the show with a party.
Yeah.
We're going to end the show with a party.
Music,
we're going to end the show
not
with a party.
Music.
as I told you earlier during Waddle's World, you know what day it is. It's not Monday, it's not Tuesday, it's not Wednesday, it's not Thursday, it's not Saturday, it's not Sunday. It's Friday. It's time for the weekend. Yeah. It's time for the screwball sign-off. Woo! And the 20th caller right now, we'll get a not a $100, not a $150, but a $200 gift card.
That's a lot of screwball peanut butter whiskey, fellas.
To Kirkwood and Bar and Grill, and as Chris and I have called it for years, we just call it Kirkwood's because we're
call it the Woods.
The Woods. Courtesy of our friends at Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. If you have some Screwball, your weekend is sure to be a little nutty. So $200 to Kirkwood Bar and Grill.
Come on, light it up.
That's awesome.
What are they calling? What number are they calling? You didn't give them a number.
They know the number. 312-332-3776. 312-332-ESPN. 312-332-3776.
See, when you gave the number out, the thing just turned green, like the whole
caller board.
Well,
you know we're on a 20-second delay, right?
We're on a delay here on the radio station. What's coming up on the baseball show tonight, guys? I would imagine you've got a lot to talk about. You've got Cubs and Sox.
Absolutely. Big series this weekend. And so I think what we're going to get off starting the show with is this, Tom. Which team is better and why? Cubs and White Sox. If you take a look at these two teams.
Are you asking or telling?
Yeah, I'm asking. We'll share our thoughts with that. But if you had to look at these two teams and say which one is better, the Cubs or the White Sox, who and why are you picking them?
That's a really good question, especially for a baseball show. Yeah. Now, I could actually say to you, if I'm buying futures, buying today.
Yeah,
I'm buying the White Sox, but if you're asking me to buy right now, the here and now, I'm probably going to take the Cubs because of their pedigree. But if this was next year, I would take the Sox. Does that make any sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. I think most people may lean because of the starting rotation. They may go with the Cubs. Although, I don't trust the lineup. And right now for the Chicago Cubs, Ian Happ is fantastic as a leadoff hitter.
Yes, he is grown.
Something else we will talk about is Fangraphs has an article about Ian Happ today. Because we talked last night about Ian Happ, whether or not you'd buy or sell a stock.
Oh.
Do you think it's going to go up from here? And I argued with Abdallah last night that this is probably the time you sell Ian Happ stock.
That's a good point.
Because he's at his peak, and at some point here, he's going to take a decline from what we've seen this production as one of the best hitters in baseball.
I was going to say, if you look at his numbers now, if you ask me whether or not Ian Happ can keep this pace up, I would say no. But I think that, you know, is it fair to expect Ian Happ to be better than he has been over the course of, I mean, he was sent down last year, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So I would buy that he's going to be better this year overall, but I'm not sure he's going to hit .315 with an on-base percentage of .438. He's got 6 home runs this year so far. 6 home runs in 24 games. So Ian Happ has gotten off to a very nice start, and I believe he will lead off and play center field for Chicago Cubs in tonight's game, the first of three with the Chicago White Sox. As I said, this was low-hanging fruit for me in terms of what to watch for. I think these three games are going to be exciting. I think both teams are pointing in the right direction. Sox are very, very exciting. Jesse Rogers, I thought, made a really good point that watch a matchup with John Lester and him trying to get out this group of right-handed power hitters on the south side.
And also for the Cubs lineup going against a lefty.
Yes.
Right? Because they've struggled. Figure that out tonight?
So you're going to get more of that baseball brilliance coming up next. Guys, it's been fun. Adam Abdallah, woo! Chris Black, you guys are always a pleasure to hang with. This 4 hours feels like it was like 14 days. I mean, just a day or no, I mean, like a couple of hours.
You want to hang for the 6 o'clock hour?
We got one more hour,
bro. If it wasn't Friday, I would hang out with you guys. Okay. But like, I don't. All right. I, you know what? This is the time
when
parent leaves and allows the young folks to do their thing and enjoy themselves.
Throw a party. So that's what we do.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you. Baseball show's coming up next. Everybody have a safe and happy weekend. This is ESPN 1000.
That was a big thrill.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No hi from you.
What?
No hi from you.
I'd give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And thank you to all, and to all a good night.